Thank you, David. It's the download here at 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman, 312-981-7200. That's the phone number because we're about to reload this week's news. The biggest stories, the winners, the losers, overreported, underreported. Which story took you down the rabbit hole and which story will be remembered from this week in 5, 10, 15, 20,
hey,
50, 100, 200.
You're talking about Chicago accents,
yes,
and stuff?
Yes, that's later tonight.
I got one for you. How do you pronounce the street Wabansia?
Oh, interesting.
What is it?
Wabansia.
Yeah, I think that's right. Because I've been in this argument with, there's like a bunch of
what's the
gentrifiers who live there in Bucktown, and they're calling it Wabansia because it sounds
good. No,
I went to Harriet Beecher Stowe School at 3444 West Wabansia, and I know Wabansia.
Right. In studio, Ken Davis and Aaron Freeman. They have a long history of making radio, and I have the great fortune of riding shotgun with these two guys tonight. Ken Davis, of course, the host of Chicago Newsroom on CAN TV.
Yes, of course.
You can find that online. Also, airs 36 different times throughout the week. It's great.
And gets better every single time you see it.
And Aaron Freeman, longtime comedian here in Chicago, former Second City alumni, as well as a radio host, journalist, and comedian in residence at the Chicago Council on Science and Technology, and... Are you a fellow at the Chicago Society for Neuroscience?
I host the Chicago Society for Neuroscience's YouTube show, Brain Buddies, with Peggy Mason from Chicago.
Which is great.
Thank you for putting me first, so I don't have the embarrassment of having to follow him like the last time.
Yeah, but you know what's going on in the world. I'm great on test tubes and Petri dishes.
He does all that, and I host an Access TV show.
Well, you're giving access to many.
That's exactly right. Exactly right. You're the voice of your generation because I see what you're wearing.
Before we start, we need to point out for the people watching on the web camera that someone has dusted off their old Loop T-shirt for tonight. It looks very hipster in doing so with his small.
Is hipster? You said that twice. Is that good?
It is. It just means that you're going to do like a more thrift store, wear something that's two or three sizes too small.
But I have to point out.
Oh, so it's not like a generational baby boomer thing.
No. I'm talking about younger. Like that's kind of like I say hipster for guys who got the like disheveled beards and play.
Oh, okay.
They play second guitar. Play rhythm guitar in the band.
But I don't want you to. Put me down on this. This is my shirt. This has been hanging in my closet for over 30 years. And as I mentioned, the funny part about it is it got a lot smaller hanging there in the closet. But I can hardly breathe.
It's amazing to think about. I mean, obviously, that'll show up tonight as we reload this week's news with the Loop. Loop had the Loop store, all that kind of stuff back in the day. I remember growing up in Wonder Lake, we would take trips to Chicago to go to the Loop store. You know, that was like part of like, or I once ditched a high school to go watch Stephen Gary at Gurney Mills. You know what I mean? Like that's like the opening of Gurney Mills. That's not dating yourself in that
later
point.
Though, he did an opening of a Menards up in Morton Grove. I remember that one. Yeah.
All right, let's get to reloading this week's news. I guess we start at the top with the biggest stories of the week. We Aaron and I agree that the Stormy Daniels story, one that has been around for a while, but this week's, I guess you would say, developments about whether or not this is legal, hush money.
Just today, there was the story that Stephen Cohen corresponded with the bank that sent the $130,000 using his Trump.org email address. But it had nothing to do with the campaign.
It really is, because you got to get past the kind of snickering about... adult film stars and
No, you don't. You don't have to get okay. What do you mean?
But it is one, Ken. This story is one that is alarming only in the sense that it shows, and Chris Hayes was on Colbert last night, and he kind of summed it up. But he said, you know, this shows a pattern. And it shows once again that denial and hiding the truth and lying and moving things around to only have it reveal itself is like, well, sorry. Moving on, and it seems to be something that continues with this administration.
Well, I like to think of it more as the beautiful Donald and Stormy love affair. And then it just kind of builds from there. But yeah, I mean, think about this. $130,000, which was apparently, I mean, you could legally call it an in-kind contribution to the Trump campaign.
But it wasn't. He just gave it to her.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
He's a great guy, okay? Yeah, like humanitarian.
So this is why I actually put it in the rabbit hole category for later on, but we'll do it now. But that's why, because at first I felt really sort of guilty about being interested
right.
in the story.
No, you're absolutely right.
You're just doing this so you can look at the picture. You right. know, no, it's not. But it's like the more I read about this thing, the deeper down I go into this, and you actually think, as we've all said, could this be the thing? Could this be the thing that brings... It won't be, but could it be?
Well, you know, what I found interesting about it, and this is also Chris Hayes' reference too, is that this was on the heels of what happened with the Access Hollywood
right.
tape. And so the
right.
hush money was not necessarily to hush Stormy Daniels because they didn't want mm-hmm. anyone to know. They knew that this coming out a week before the election right. had the ability for them to lose the election. So they did everything possible mm-hmm. to cover it up, even questionable ethics. Not questionable ethics, terrible ethics, but questionable legality yeah. when yeah. it comes to where they got the money, how they did it, and we're finding out even more today.
But they were in such a hurry that they apparently made some mistakes in the way they did it.
Now, I will tell you, I will confess here on the radio that since the breaking of the scandal, I have gone on Pornhub uh-huh. and checked out. Okay, I'm telling you, have neither of you gone on and checked out Stormy's videos?
No, I have not. I've resisted. Okay. I've resisted, Aaron. But
you're a better
ahead.
Person.
No, I'm not a better person. Right? Trust me. But yeah. but I get what you're saying. I mean, this is why she's doing it. I mean, it's a yeah, huge yeah, marketing yeah. draw for her, right?
Absolutely.
But you haven't gone to one of her personal appearances, have you?
No, but okay. I'll tell you, if she,
my family, has, I digress.
But I'm of mixed views about viewing yeah. the photos. Because do I really want? If once seeing certain people naked. Is it possible to unsee that?
Right. Well, here, this is a good point, and this is the point that I think where we're at in this debate is that there's that part of the argument where you're like, it's salacious, it's oh, I can go find it, it's there's so much in, oh my god, to something that has a little bit more to do with national security. It has to do with this idea of what should be done as a president, or what should I mean? There's so much in this that is wrong, and when you start to read the piece down and go down the rabbit hole on this story, you find more and more questionable moves by an administration that in this form in campaign mode mm-hmm. that did things that were essentially to cover up or to lie.
Yeah. Yeah. Did you see Eric Zorn's thing about the letter
he should write?
What he should yeah. say? Yeah. And it's, you know, there's something to that.
What did he say?
He said Trump should make a speech saying, you know, I had to hide this from you, America, because I thought you couldn't handle it. But now I found out that you can. Well, it's all right. Because that is another aspect of this Trump administration, is that I still don't know if it's a good thing or a bad thing, but he has made it possible for almost anything that you can conceive to be real. And to say that he's cheapened everything is obvious, but there's actually something more to it than that.
When you get into the actual what could happen, so this is where I find it very interesting. So essentially, he has plausible deniability by not signing the NDA mm-hmm. that he had nothing to do. He said never
yeah.
happened.
Yeah.
So
and so did she.
So did she. Right. So the now you get to the point where you're like, well, if you're going to try and go to the courts and get a court order that says you're breaking the NDA, that never happened. That mm-hmm. wasn't signed.
Right.
So if you break that, then you know you're going to be sued or fined or whatever.
$1 million per incident.
Yeah. So. You start to get into this weird unraveling of all of these kind of lies. No, I didn't. Yes, I did. That didn't happen. But if it did happen, I mean, all of this stuff that comes out, and that's the part that I just feel like it erodes the trust. And I know that's weird because we're yeah. talking about the Trump administration, yeah. but you erodes the trust yeah. of what our administration and these politicians are capable of.
But I, from a great height, scorned the women who accused Bill Clinton.
Mm-hmm.
I saw the Juanita Roderick tape back mm-hmm. in the 90s, I made fun of Paula Jones' trashy, you know, white trash trailer,
right.
you know, and I stuck my nose up about Monica Lewinsky, and you know, and the stuff that in fact Clinton is accused of much more horrible behavior than Trump has.
Yeah,
but we let it go, and I'm just thinking, so it was acceptable when it was our guy, and so I understand better how the Trump fans can forgive.
Yeah, boy, do I understand that, because I think my first reaction was, I remember how sternly I was lecturing people on, this has nothing to do with his ability as a president.
Ah, interesting.
Right?
Yeah,
yeah. Absolutely. Like, right. And yeah. You know, I don't know anything about Monica Lewinsky, and I don't care about Monica Lewinsky. What happens between two consenting people is not my business. He is a good president, I used to say, and I support him as president. Now when I see Trump supporters doing that, I my hands are on my hips, and I'm saying, how can you possibly? So, you know, we're all hypocrites, let's face it, every last one of us. But the real issue to me on this one, and the way in which this is different, and it is significantly different, is that we're really beginning to see how vulnerable Trump is to blackmail, frankly. I mean, this is not blackmail, but it's kind of close,
it's in,
because
that family,
she's kind of, you know, she was willing to sign an NDA. Now all of a sudden she wants to tell the whole story. So that kind of shows you, when you have this kind of loosey-goosey past, it can come back and haunt you in really bad ways.
Yeah. Ken Davis, Aaron Freeman, we're reloading this week's news. We'll come back and we'll start the winners and the losers. The other big story, which will fall into other categories, was the gun control measures that were signed by the Florida governor this week, and we're going to talk about that as well. Lots to get to. 312-981-7200. Jump in when you like. It's a download. Stay with us. It's Download 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. In studio, Aaron Freeman, Ken Davis. We're reloading this week's news, 312-981-7200. All right, let's get to the winners. My first, a story we're going to talk about is, of course, the election that's coming up here. Are you guys excited as I am? I have in my winner category primary voters.
Yeah.
If you're into primaries, oh man, this is your time, right?
You got your choices, yeah.
Well,
yeah.
It's certainly we in Highland Park, because our mayor is running, so we're all we personally know somebody. I want somebody I can call up. I've been to her house and play in her pool.
Don't you wish we all had that experience, so we can vote for who we played in the pool? Ken, what do you make of this election season? As we've seen, political ads are out in force now, and they're a very interesting lot, and we can talk about it. But is this a good primary season? You guys have covered this.
I don't know if this is my neighborhood, but are you getting things now where you're getting all those mailbox stuffer things stapled together? I'm getting like six or eight of them at a time stapled together.
Oh my gosh!
Because they just
I've seen this on social media too. A lot of people are posting their texts.
Yeah.
And now the new thing is that the campaigns will text you.
Yeah.
Wow. And they will text you saying, hey, you want to come out and support or volunteer? Hey, mm-hmm. Who are you going to vote for? Mm-hmm. And everyone's just like, you don't slide up in my text. So.
But there's no real way to know, but my sense of this is that it's going to be just another primary. It'll be 20%, 25% turnout, and it's all a lot of hoopla for nothing, because the number of people who are going to make these decisions is in the low thousands in each race.
I will say this. Let's talk. We have the luxury of all been worked on different election coverage in the past, and we've all at one point or another covered Pat Quinn, I'm sure, in some variation. The attorney general's race, that's an interesting one, because you have Pat Quinn, who was I don't know if there's ever been a case in Illinois history I don't know my Illinois political history, but where a sitting governor is now running for a lesser seat.
Yeah. Yeah.
And how, I mean, right now, just on name recognition, he's got neck and neck with Kwame Raoul, the state senator, but as you see these commercials, I mean, what's to make of the former Democratic governor running for attorney general?
Well, I think, you know, some people have observed that this is the job he should have gone for originally. Right. He probably would have been a lot better attorney general than governor. I mean, you know, I'm not deprecating him in many ways. He was a very good governor, but this was the job that he was born to do, is be this, you know, consumer advocate kind of thing. And he wants to sue Trump, and he'll have a lot of fun if he gets the job doing that.
Yeah. Wasn't the line about that, do you rise to your level of incompetence?
Yeah.
he wasn't such a great governor. I mean, I know there were some things about him that were fun. inspirational was not right, among the characteristics right, right. that we would have applied to Mr. Quinn.
But it's interesting because, you know, he kind of jumped into the pool and splashed all the water out of the pool. And what we're not really focusing on is that there are some really high quality candidates in that thing.
It's always so much fun to,
it's just so, you know, we always love to just, you know, dump on these candidates. But this is a lineup of people about whom you could probably say almost any one of them could walk in the job and do it. And that's a really cool thing. So, you know, Quinn gets all the attention, but he's not necessarily the only candidate worth looking
well,
at.
Well, I was going to say, Pat Brady was on, as I filled in for Cochran this week, and we talked about that the Republicans are salivating over the idea of Pat Quinn winning that nomination mm-hmm. because they feel like that plays to their candidate, Erica Harold, mm-hmm. a new versus the old
yep.
general election mm-hmm. strategy that would benefit them.
Well, that's certainly true of a lot of the Democrats who are old. Nancy Pelosi.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of old folks, old ideas, people who are saying this, who have been saying the same stuff for decades. Some of it is very cool, but there are very gray hairs. A lot of gray hairs on the people saying.
I think that's one of the biggest issues that the Democratic Party has. And you know, I digress a little bit, but if you look back, you go back to, you know, 40 or 50 years ago, right, or even beyond, Barry Goldwater, and then the William F. Buckley wing of the Republican Party starts making these noises in the background and saying, we're going to build a party that we're not going to see. We may not be alive to see this, but we're building a party that is going to own this country in 40 or 50 years. And they succeeded.
Yeah.
And they own this country. And you know, from what I know, we're going to talk about this later too, but if Kennedy steps down, they will absolutely lock the Supreme Court up and they'll have the whole kit and caboodle. They can do anything they want. And that happened because they planned it and they stayed true to their vision from decades ago.
Well, I mean, and the Republican Party, absolutely, when you talk about that, and you can see how it's playing out in all around the country. In Illinois, the Republican Party, you think about the 80s and the 90s, were on top of the world, and it's, mm-hmm. it crumbled a little bit in the way that all of the major, I mean, Bruce Rauner came in as a change agent, hasn't done much. I mean, the Republican Party right now is searching for its soul. They have a challenger on the incumbent, not always a good thing, mm-hmm. and a challenger that is calling out that this Republican had betrayed the party.
Well, you know, I must say that I understand totally what you're saying, that the Republicans run and the conservatives run a lot of what's going on. But generally speaking, as I like to say, if I say, what's the right-wing conservative news outlet? You'd say Fox. And if you take Fox of 2018, move it back to 1967, it is the hippie news station.
Mm-hmm.
They got women, they got Negroes, they got Hispanics, they got gay. You would never, ever, ever have seen such a thing. So that while it is certainly true that the William F. Buckleys and the conservatives are on the march, they're not the William F. Buckley conservatives of the day.
But
they are much more hippie-like.
I guess the point that I'm trying to lead this to is that I don't see and have never seen anything that's an equivalent to that to the left. The left is not capable of imposing discipline on it, upon itself, and giving marching orders and then marching to that tune. It just can't be done. The left is a
even
herd
in
of cats.
2008?
What about 2008? What you mean,
Obama?
I don't know. I don't think so.
No,
really.
Because you could make an argument that it was fractured because mm-hmm. Hillary Clinton was supposed to be the nominee in 2008, and there were a lot, including the man who's running for governor and on the Democratic side, J.B. Pritzker, mm-hmm. was for Hillary Clinton at that point. There were a lot, even in this state, there were a lot of Democrats that weren't just backing Barack Obama.
Yeah. But I mean, ultimately, when he got they did organize, they joined and said, hope and change, hope and change.
Yeah,
hope
but
and change.
I guess I don't want to make too big a deal out of this, but can you identify for me a left intellectual leader, a thinker, who is kind of, you know, bringing together the academic thought of the left? I mean, I can't think of one because there's so many different factions.
Hmm. Well, the closest I can come up with is Michael Moore.
Yeah.
I mean, I suppose you could make an argument
Bernie
for
Sanders. I suppose
Bernie,
in some
you could
ways.
Make an argument for Bernie Sanders. You could make an argument sort of for
Elizabeth Warren.
Elizabeth Warren.
Yeah. I mean, some of those. some of those folks, I mean, but they have their issues as well.
But it goes back to, I mean, even with Sanders and Warren, it goes back to the Democrats are old.
That's right.
That's the beginning of this conversation.
Speaking as an aged American, I'm not offended by that.
A seasoned citizen.
And it's really, it's just kind of weird how I look around and I see so many people look like me. And it's like, you know, we should be out of here by now. You should have pushed us out of here.
Ken Davis, Aaron Freeman are in studio tonight. We're Reloading the News. 312-981-7200. If you want to jump in, that's the phone number. You can text or call. We're going to take a break, get the news with David Jennings. Come back, continue with the winners. You're on the download. Stay with us. Thanks, David. It's Download 720 WGN. 312-981-7200. We're reloading this week's news with Aaron Freeman, who is a comedian in residence at the Chicago Council on Science and Technology. Also does a great podcast.
Oh, Alexa, stop it. I always carry my Alexa dot in my back pocket. Sorry.
The Chicago Science Society of Neuroscience. That's Ken Davis, the host of CAN TV. Alexa, stop laughing. All right, so let's keep going with the winners. Both of you had similar winners around the same story, and this was the story of North Korea reaching out to get the United States to come to the table, and of course our president accepted the invitation. Aaron, you have Kim Jong-un, and Ken, in the same vein, you have the South Korean president. So let's talk about this story. This is another one which I've gone down the rabbit hole a bit.
Yeah.
I'd had no idea that this has been something that has been offered to American presidents in the past, and they declined. Mostly following the lead of the State Department. Many may say there's no State Department right now, but I mean, what do you make of this? I mean, is it a good thing? I would think that you're listening and like, good that they're, well, like, this Trump is winning.
Don't get so agitated about it, because you know that what happened is that they brought him in the back room afterward and today, and they said, you're going to go back out there and you're going to say, we'll meet, but only when he denuclearizes North Korea, right? So that's the new word today. So this meeting isn't going to happen. It's like he wants gun control until he has lunch with the NRA, right? It's not going to happen, I don't think. But yeah, I gave credit to Moon Jae-in, the South Korean president, because, you know, since he's been elected, he's been trying to do some reunification stuff with the North. I mean, a lot of the Olympics credit goes to him for that kind of rapprochement that they were doing.
Well, don't be a international. He's talking to rapprochement.
Stop daring
in Chicago, the man.
I'm trying to sound more like him.
you got very Chris Roebling up here in the area. why do you put Kim Jong Un in the winner category?
Because the Kims have wanted a face-to-face meeting with the U.S. president since Kim Il Sung. Mm-hmm. That's what they've wanted. They don't want the six-party. You know, they don't want to talk to the dog. They want to talk to the guy with the leash. And as you say, no U.S. president has agreed, no sitting U.S. president has agreed to sit down with a North Korean leader until...
Is it because they're aware of that? I mean, they understand what the North Korean president's trying to do?
Well, the U.S. doesn't recognize Korea.
It's not
officially recognized Korea. They don't do that. And so that was one of the... Now, there have been negotiations, direct negotiations with the U.S. In 1994, there was the agreed framework.
The agreed framework.
Okay. For this exercise, I will play pro-Trump.
Okay.
In the sense that he has set out to negotiate in a different way. He's talked about it on Twitter. He's talked about it in press conference, everywhere he can, that the former presidents of this country have failed in trying to denuclearize North Korea and get this country in line with the rest of the world. I'm here now. I'm known for my negotiation tactics and skills. I'm not your regular American president. He made that very clear. I'm not going to follow the traditions and the same reservations of the past. I'm going to do things my way. That's good, right? That's why he was elected to do this. And in a way, maybe a face-to-face with Kim Jong-un and Donald Trump would actually get us on the path to not feeling as if there's a missile pointed at us every single day.
Can I take this one?
Please. There it is right there, down over the plate.
No.
Letters high. Go ahead.
I got to tell you something. I was very reluctant to say this, but when I heard that, this little tingle thing happened inside me, and it was the first time I ever felt anything positive about Donald J. Trump. It was like, you go, guy. You know, this you're right. Look, this guy's nuts. This guy is completely and totally nuts. And so is Kim Jong-un. And so is the president of North Korea.
Stepped on that. Sorry, seriously.
I mean, but seriously, folks, here's two guys who can speak the same language to each other. They cut away all of the fat and they just get down to, I hate you. I hate you. Okay, well, then let's make a deal, right? And it made me feel kind of like I had a little bit of excitement there. But, of course, I knew that it wouldn't last, and it hasn't. So.
All right, Aaron Freeman.
Well, my hero, Vladimir Putin, points out that it – I mean it. Vladimir. Totally my hero. Vlad points out that it doesn't matter who the president is. The policies stay the same. Mm-hmm. They all maintain the 30,000 hostile forces on the Korean Peninsula.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter who it is, Obama did. I mean, you know, they're all the many people who argue that U.S. foreign policy is dictated by that military-industrial complex that Eisenhower warned us against. And the policies remain the same. Obama started more wars than Bush. Bush starts war. Carter started the Afghan war. This is – it doesn't matter. Because the as Obama
and Trump and Trump has fallen into that as well. But he's been very blustery when it comes to the military. He's done a lot where a lot of people have said, "Oh, I wish we had more negotiator Donald Trump, not this rah rah military."
But there's a limit. I mean, there's a very little window that the president gets to operate in because there are permanent interests, permanent gigantically well moneyed, gigantically popular interests, and it doesn't matter at all who you are. You are in your little box. You got a little wiggle room in there, but overall, it doesn't matter.
So does he defy the State Department, defy the military of the president and say, you know what? No, I'm going to do it. I'm going to go meet with him. What's the harm?
Well, my read on this is that he's not going to get the chance because he's been told, no, you can't do this. You have to go back there and demand that he denuclearize the North Korea before you can meet with him. And that seems to be what Sarah Huckabee Sanders was saying today is the new policy. Hmm. So I don't know whether he's signed on to it or not, but that's what they're saying he says.
Today.
Let's go to
well,
line.
Well, that was as of 4 o'clock.
Let's go to line. Let's bring Tim in. Tim, what's your thought on North Korea?
Yeah, good evening, gentlemen. Good evening. I think the North Korean thing and everything else that keeps popping up on a daily, weekly, whatever it is, basis, is every time they get close to the Russian investigation, every time somebody comes up like the porn star and all that, all of a sudden things change and everything gets serious about things that aren't going to happen. And the media and the people in this country and a lot of the broadcasters are living in a really illusionary world.
Well, you follow.
Like
but you have to be fair to the media and to the people. I mean, if you're going to go step out of line and say I'm going to meet with the North Korean president for the first time,
and
you have to cover that, right? Maybe it's baloney, but you have to cover it.
Yeah, it's all baloney.
You can't be like, nah.
I'll pay anything to hear what that porn star has to say because I'm telling you. That's legit, and she's got some great things to say. And
you won't need to pay anything. Thanks, believe me, you'll get it for free. I guarantee you.
But I want to just say for a moment, Justin, I'm not absolutely certain that I certainly understand that you said that if he makes an announcement about Kim Jong-un or if the porn star comes out, you have to cover it for kind of commercial news reasons.
Right.
But it's sort of like the mass shootings, which are a microscopic percentage of the risks attendant to people in this country. I mean, it's nothing. The number of people killed by mass shootings doesn't show up on anybody's graph. High fructose corn syrup will kill exponentially more Americans. So that it is possible to imagine a media sphere wherein the actual threats to human life, the actual policies that cause all the trouble in the world are the ones that are addressed, but they're not.
Well, you can make an argument that maybe you're covering the wrong things, but if you're in a position where American policy, foreign policy has dictated and for decades, they said you can't go meet with the North Korean president, and then the president says he's going to do it, I mean that fits into the pyramid of what you cover on news, right? I mean,
it's news. It is news.
I agree with Tim in the sense that maybe there is. I do agree, being in this chair, that there are a lot of times when North Korea bubbles up when there are other things bubbling up, and whether it be the NDA and Stormy Daniels or a lot of things. This was the week we haven't even talked about. I guess you put him in the loser category, Sam Nunberg, and that whole weird thing. That was weird, but it was weird. And the point being, again, here we go, where things start to crumble a little bit, and then there was the great piece in Yahoo for the book that's coming up about how Obama handled the Russian the medal in the election. There's a lot starting to connect itself, and Trump is in the middle of it, so it does make a little bit of sense for conspiracy theorists to be like, what button should I push to not have this be on the front page?
Well, that's true, and of course, you know, there's the last year's Nobel Prize in economics went to Richard Thaler over at the University of Chicago for behavioral economics. His work in behavioral economics. Behavioral economics. So the classical economics assumes a rational actor making informed decisions in pursuit of hedonic gratification. Behavioral economics shows that we are, in fact, rational actors making informed. Oh, look, something shiny. So, you know,
Look, a porn star.
Yeah, I mean, that's the absolute truth. That is what,
shining.
That's what human
you're
beings are like. That's how we actually are.
And maybe they've tapped into that, knowing exactly how to distract. Ken Davis, Aaron Freeman, we're reloading this week's news. We'll take a break. We'll come back, and we will continue. Let's get to the losers. Losers are always, that's always fun, right?
Yeah, this winter stuff.
This winter stuff's for the birds.
Yeah.
This is a download. Stay with us. Of course, one of the big stories this week, the Loop here in Chicago, that's a big story. I don't really know where to put it, the rabbit hole, winners, losers. I mean, you can put it anywhere in any of the categories.
I'll put it somewhere. I'll put it in the business pages. You know what that radio station sold for? $20 million. You know what you had to pay for that station 20 years ago? Probably $200 million, right? I mean, or $150, $180
million. Right.
This is a story of the radio industry in America.
By the way, can I just mention, who's going to be on the 90 with the Loop channels?
Right here.
It's going to be what 97.
It's going to be like Christian.
Temporary Christian,
non-commercial Christian. So they're going to actually do fundraisers, just like you and I used to do.
Anybody know offhand what a station, a stick like that, should go for?
I don't know.
Because I've had conversations with a few friends, and they're like, $21.5 million is really on the low side.
That's the point.
Incredibly
right.
low. Yep. That's yep. the point. Yep. It's yep. just unbelievably low. And this is what has happened all across America, where these giant corporations have come in and scarfed up all the stations. They jacked them up. They acted like slum lords. They just milked them dry. They jacked up the prices. Their share prices went up. And then all slowly over the years, the fact that they weren't investing in the stations, that they didn't have personalities, that their stations were just kind of slop. They just kind of all just dried up on the vine.
I will say this, that, you know, I've seen this in the trades, but I've also, and for a couple of years, I think a lot of people in the radio industry have paid attention to the Clear Channel rebranded itself as iHeartRadio or iHeartMedia, and that company is getting closer and closer to bankruptcy proceedings. Mm-hmm. And if that happens, that's what happened. That's why the Loop got sold.
Yeah.
Merlin Media was a bankruptcy kind of thing. Those contracts from the LS had them, or Cumulus had them. Anyway, Cumulus went bankrupt. It doesn't matter. But the point being, this is not the end. There will be other radio stations, and the Clear Channel or the iHeartMedia stations. That's a slew of them in Chicago.
I actually remember back in the public radio days, we were talking about this and saying, you know, if we just wait around about 20 years, we're going to be able to pick up one of these stations for about $10 million, and we'll be able to have a second public radio station. Instead, the Christians did it.
The Christians beat public radio to it.
Yeah.
All right, let's talk about losers. And I guess this is a good segment that another one that crosses over, because you could look at either side and say winners and losers. But let's go with losers. The NRA leads off the loser category, as for the first time in who knows when, a state legislature in a very red state, in the state of Florida, of course, the state in which the latest school shooting in Parkland, they were able to pass a package that the NRA was against.
Justin, you are so naive. You are so naive. Ken
Davis.
Oh, my dear little Justin.
What happened there?
What happened there was they called up Rick Scott and they said, "Okay, you're A plus. We know you're with us. We're gonna let you. We're gonna have to let you have a pass on this one, but we're gonna sue you the same day you do this," which is what they did. They sued to get that law overturned. Whether they do or not doesn't matter. They are no less strong than they ever were, and they're just letting Rick Scott have a little bit of a pass because they know he's in trouble right now, and they know it's all going to blow over in a year, and everything's going to be fine. They are not losers. They will never be losers in our lifetime.
Hey, Aaron Freeman.
Well, I take your point. I mean, your point is extremely well taken, but I would say this, that the passion and eloquence of the little high school students did, in fact, move the dial.
It did. It moved the needle.
That counts.
Yeah.
That I count that as a substantial victory because it's something that, speaking of what old people are incapable of, it's something that the old people really have not been able to do. And right. Had it not been for Emma Gonzalez and the passion of those
David
young people,
right.
Yeah, we wouldn't have seen anything whatsoever.
Now you're seeing walkouts that are scheduled in this area. Yeah. I think it's Plainfield, one in Barrington, other places like that.
So and the 24th, March 24th is the March for Our Lives. Yeah. And so your point is still well taken, because but one of the things that really shocked me as I was going through all this, I had always up until 2 weeks ago thought of the NRA as primarily a gun lobby, but then I looked at some FEC stuff, and it turns out that the NRA PAC is 90% funded by contributions of under $200. The largest contribution over the last 10 years total is the guy's given $55,000 over 10 years.
Wow.
That's the largest. Yeah.
What does that mean?
It was 5,000 a year.
No, but I'm just saying, what's the takeaway on that?
Well, it means that it really is a really seriously, intensely grassroots organization.
Right. Yeah.
And it really is. Now, there is the manufacturers do have a group that helps to write laws, but the people who do all the opposition campaigns and commercials, that money, that $85 million a year, comes from those 3 million
from
people
the
who put up.
The other thing, too, is, in Chicago, or in the state of Illinois, the state legislature quickly passed something similar to what was passed in Florida. It sits on the governor's desk, Governor Rauner. Of course, it's election season. They're a week away. This is an issue that has divided his party on the right. You see impassioned speeches from the mayor of Chicago and the people on the left that are like, sign this for the good of our country, for the state, for the children. Which seems so disingenuous. We know what's going on because they want to trap the governor so they can use it.
I mean, everybody
can print it. They got the campaign ad ready.
That's right. Yeah. The printing presses are ready to roll on those door knocker things. Yeah. No, I don't see the NRA's strength. There's nothing I would like in my life more than to be desperately wrong about this, and you can have me back and make vicious fun of me when the NRA is at half its strength and gun laws are just popping up all over the country.
The NRA is going to get into trouble when Donald Trump is president, I'll tell you.
because gun sales go down when he's president.
Aaron Freeman, Ken Davis, we're reloading this week's news. We'll stay with, we got other losers, but we also got coming up overreported and underreported.
Oh, good.
Yeah, so those stories coming up here on The Download. Stay with us. Thanks, David. It's the Download 720 WGN. Justin Kaufman here. Ken Davis, Aaron Freeman in studio. We're reloading this week's news. We're to the overreported and underreported.
Oh, Alexa, come on. Stop it.
That's one of the overreported stories, don't you think? That's crazy that there's so much out there. We really do have this fascination with everything that's happening in our homes. And this story about the Alexa essentially laughing when it, for no reason, has tripped everybody up. Everybody has relates to this
you
being like, this
us,
is the end
you
of days.
You asked us to consider headlines for a week from now.
Next week's headlines.
Yeah,
right.
And I think mine was Amazon apologizes for Alexa taking pictures of people in the shower and posting them on Facebook.
Oh, that's
you know
good.
That, you know that's coming up. Yeah.
Oh,
you
that's
know it.
Good.
You know it. Yeah, I don't have one. I don't. Do you guys have a speaker in your home?
No. No, I don't know if that's.
I'm surprised you don't.
Is that an age thing?
Well,
you probably
like,
don't.
You are the single best
2001
adopter I've ever known.
That's true.
You are. You are like the greatest early adopter.
Except my wife is not.
Ah.
Although let me say this, it's absolutely true that you say if you say anything that sounds like "Okay, Google," both our phones will pop up.
Right, we'll
respond. So that she knows intellectually that our phones are listening all the time, too. Because her rap is that she doesn't like the idea that they're listening all the time, but she knows intellectually
that she knows they are.
Yeah, but she doesn't like the idea that Alexa, she knows it, and she doesn't
she brags about it.
Alexa, I'm listening. I'm listening. I hear every little
thing.
I'm
just sitting here listening.
Have you guys seen this thing about the new Google camera? I wrote it down, but I didn't bring it with me. But there's a name for it. It's got a cute little name. But this camera is like Alexa. It's on all the time. And it has facial recognition. This is like an early, you know, 1.0 model, and it's going to get worse and worse, or better and better. But what happens is it recognizes a face and says, oh, that's my master's friend. So it'll record like a burst of 15 or 18 seconds so that when you check it later, you've got all these little mini movies of everybody around you, and you can pick the pictures up. Right, but it gets worse than that.
You, I, then, know that. I think your next week's headline is right on.
We're
moving into sorry mode real quick here. Apologize over and over. I have overreported the return American Idol. Don't care. Ken, what do you got for overreported?
I think you're really going to make me do this, aren't you? I would say the overreported Justin is the Block Club Chicago hits its target on Kickstarter, huh? No, it's not really, but hey,
no, but
good,
I know
good
what you're
for
saying.
Them.
Good for them. Congrats. I mean, the but biggest it's Kickstarter in local journalism history.
Yeah.
But you're absolutely right, because the journalism community has been hearing about this story on social media channels because they're getting the word out a lot.
So we basically everybody in the business loves DNA Info, knows all these people. They all had thrown out of work. And when they raised $183,720 from 3,143 backers in like a couple of days,
awesome,
including me, I'm one of them, it just became news. And I just thought it was really kind of funny that
they were the news. What do you got for overreported Aaron Freeman? Ooh.
Tamika Mallory and Louis Farrakhan.
Yes, the Reverend.
Yeah, and I understand. I certainly understand why politicians have to, in this day and age, come out and denounce him. But I also understand why Danny Davis and various other people have been going to the founders of the Savior Day thing for a long time. Because when I grew up with the Nation of Islam, and they really were modeled, the people in the streets were models of good behavior. They were always clean and well-dressed and respectful and spoke well and sold wonderful bean pies. And so when Farrakhan says this weird thing about Jews, it's in a much, much larger context, because, like, generally speaking, the melanin-challenged among us don't really know much about those guys. You know, so all you hear is...
you only hear the negative stuff.
Yeah, he pops up on the news, but there's a whole
But it is negative stuff. I mean, what Farrakhan is saying, I mean, you can't say that stuff ever.
No.
You can't say that stuff.
And you can't be associated with it at all. That's absolutely true. But like I said, we were saying before about Bill Clinton, there are things that were acceptable 20 years ago that are just not...
Well,
Al Franken
the
would
story,
still be in office.
The story, which is... Yeah, right. The story is that Tamika Mallory is one of the organizers of the Women's March. She had tweeted out, or she was at the speech of Louis Farrakhan, the Reverend, and he said disparaging things about Jews, which he does all the time, and she was mentioned in his speech, and then she backed it up on Twitter, and then when people called her out saying, wait, that's seems a little strange that you would be all for inclusion yet be intolerant in this case, she backed it up. It took a couple days for them to all get together and say, oh, well, no, statement time. But there was a lot of pushback saying, you know, there's so much made on the right that if you associate yourself to people who use hate speech, you have to, you know, you have to publicly disassociate yourself. And so that became the question of, does the left have to do the same thing, especially African-American politicians?
And, you know, it's a funny thing, though, about this story, which is that I am always shocked at people who are opposed to gays. Like, it's not... I live in Highland Park. I mean, my sister was a lesbian. It's no longer in my head. I'm always, like, stunned that anybody is not pro-gay rights, not pro-gay marriage. I just don't get it.
Or at the very least, can't just live with it.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah, right.
Well, I mean, part of the thing that Farrakhan kind of said, you know, that the Jews are responsible for Hollywood, where men become women and women become men. And you go, well, that's a good thing, right? I think that's great. That's so cool. Yeah. I mean, as a Jew, I'm proud. Yeah, okay. We're pushing gender spectrum. All right, yes. But yeah. I know that's not true. I know that there are a lot of people around the country who feel very differently about it.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm just always stunned. I guess I'm just always stunned because I live in a bubble. Yeah. I live on the North Shore.
Yeah, I mean, we could do a whole hour on that because even we saw that kind of the story on the Attorney General's race, the Republican, Erica Harold, who was asked to, I mean, so I don't even understand, the behind the scenes, off the record, or off mic question at the Miss Illinois pageant in 2000. I didn't know they did that.
Yeah.
And the question was, which again, you're like, this is a beauty pageant question?
Sounds like a gotcha question.
Yeah, and they're like, okay, last one, what's your favorite color? Okay, how would you save the world? Last one, if you needed to put a kid in foster care, would you A, give it to a loving gay couple, or B, a heterosexual couple that has a history of abuse? That was the question. And she says, history of abuse, because I don't believe in gay marriage, or I don't believe in gays and adoption or whatever. And you're just like, huh. That's but I mean, what, talk about a questionable question. But but I mean, the same thing. But that was 2000. She actually has come out and says she's changed her tone.
Look, obviously, there are people in this country right now who really just have
listening to us.
Yeah, listening to us. And it's just what's, you know, it's one of those things that it's, us old baby boomers have got to kind of calm down, take a couple of deep breaths, and recognize.
Well, I will say this, and we'll move on from it, but you wonder how much religion plays, because the Nation of Islam or the Christianity and their beliefs against things like gays or on the other side, Jews in the case of Nation of Islam.
Yeah.
A lot of that is moved by religion. It's hard to say to an African-American politician, denounce your religion.
Right.
As it's hard to say to someone who believes in their religion that there shouldn't, that gays should not be married, to say denounce that. So that's true. Religion is really at the center.
But culture is a big thing too. I mean, because down south, it's just not south of I-80. Like down south of I-80, it's just a different kind of world down there. You know, they ain't like it up here in the north.
All right, let's move on. Let's do underreported
before we all get in real trouble.
No, hey, we'll keep going here. Underreported. I have the. I'll do real quick. And the Fed. Floated student loan debt bankruptcy as a thing this week, which is never really been floated. Student loans have always, for some reason, there's even protections in the laws right now that essentially say that they won't apply bankruptcy like they would to any other business loan.
Right.
Now they're saying this debt is going to crush our economy. We should offer bankruptcy protection to these kids and they can clear their name in 10 years and get out from underneath it. We may have to do that more than we think. So there was a question about that. And I thought that was really interesting coming from the Fed that was appointed by Donald Trump. I just thought it was an interesting move and not really
reported
much.
I can't help but snark that maybe this is coming from the president because this is how he built his business.
His entire business is built on bankruptcy. I mean, when you talk about business, bankruptcy is a big part of it. Yeah, so you're absolutely, I mean, gaining wealth and losing debt is always plays out in the courts.
Yeah.
So why can't students do the same thing?
Why can't students do it?
But so is it true that none of us understand the reason why student debt cannot be relieved by bankruptcy?
What is it?
I have no idea. I mean, I don't know.
Essentially, it's an ageist thing. It's an ageist thing saying that the 19-year-old is going to do it. If they have the opportunity to go bankrupt, they're going to because they're kids and they want to smoke doobie or whatever it is. The point, that's the idea. The idea of being, idea that they're saying kids are going to default because they're not responsible yet. So we can't let them do it. So there's actually, I think it's a law on the books in Congress that you cannot default through bankruptcy.
Student debt canceled by bankruptcy.
Which I'm glad that they're looking at. All right, underreported for you. You had something on this thing called DACA. I've never heard of it.
This is kind of a serious one, I guess. But you know, if you remember, Donald Trump said that he was canceling DACA.
Action
Deferred Action for Child Child arrival, sorry. Yes. Deferred action for child arrival. He canceled the program effective on March 5th. What that means is that all these almost million people who had signed up for it, and remember when it was Obama brought it into, there was this whole debate about should I sign up for it or not because the government's going to have my information.
Right.
They signed up for it, and then depending on when you signed in, you got 2 years, and then you had to renew every 2 years. So starting March 1st, Trump was going to said that he would not allow them to renew anymore, which meant that every single day there would be 1,000 to 2,000 people who would be falling through the cracks and would no longer and eligible for deportation.
I mean, the DACA deadline was such a big deal a month ago. Oh,
right.
March 5th, it's got to be done. That we held up. There was a government shutdown around it. It's March 9th.
Yeah, and we did a show on this. We did a show on this on my little show on the 1st of March because this is like, we're only four days away. But it was the hair on fire. And then the Supreme Court, it came to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court said, we're not going to hear this, which meant that the challenges were moot, and therefore the law had to stay in place and could not be canceled.
Oh.
So what you have is a temporary situation where it's no longer, they're no longer in direct jeopardy, but the jeopardy remains because it's still working through the courts.
University of Chicago is on your list for underreported.
Yes. Well, Jake, my good buddy, my partner on the Chicago Rainbow, buddies, Peggy Mason, who's a professor of neurobiology at Chicago, pointed this out on her blog, The Brain is So Cool, which is that Jason Leib is a very, very, very famous and well-respected scholar around the country. He'd left two previous universities after allegations, unproven allegations of sexual misconduct, got to the University of Chicago. Now, the thing about the thing is, the University of Chicago is like the poster child for non-politically correct schools. They have the Chicago memo where they said, we don't do triggers, safe spaces. We don't do trigger warnings. We're the University of Chicago where fun comes to die, okay? we're not there. But the University of Chicago, after receiving the hearing these allegations, they granted what everybody thinks was due process, and Jason Leib is out. And that is a really big deal because, again, I didn't even hear about this story. It's a big deal in academia.
but one of the reasons why it's a big deal, too, is that a lot of times when you get allegations, you got to go through Title IX. There's everything in between, and there was a lot of pushback at the Obama administration, how that went through. Yep. For all of what's happening in Me Too and Hollywood and other places, campuses they can essentially say, it's a private matter and do nothing.
And that was because he was moved along through the university because he produced a lot of good science, and because nobody wanted to wreck so brilliant a career is what a lot of people think. Mm-hmm. But U Chicago, again, the non-politically correct U Chicago, the politically incorrect gang, they gave what they thought was due process, what most people agree was due process, and he's gone. And that was a big one of the biggest professors to fall to the Me Too movement.
Ken Davis, Aaron Freeman. When we come back, we'll do the rabbit hole stories, and also we'll pick which story is going to be remembered in 5, 10, 15, 20, 500 years from now. So stay with us. Ken Davis, Aaron Freeman, reloading this week's news. Rabbit hole story. We'll do it quick because we want to get to which story we're going to remember here. But the great story about a new book coming out about Obama's administration, not just Obama, but the handling of the meddling in the election by the Russians. And there's excerpts or just a piece in Yahoo News about it that I just found so fascinating. Because there were a lot of missteps that were made by the Obama administration, but it also showed how a White House is supposed to work. There was collaboration, there was communication, there was shooting down bad ideas, saying we don't want that to be leaked out. It felt like they took all the information in. What I loved about the story was that the intelligence departments, the people that were involved, they wanted to get to a point where they could bring it to Obama and say, this is what we think, as opposed to letting him in too early and all this. Kind of, it just felt like how it was supposed to work. At the end, Obama made the decision to say, you know what, let's just go quietly because we don't want to put political, partisan politics and this election over what's happening in our electoral system.
And you don't want to behave in ways that will cause American citizens to think that their electoral system isn't functioning. You don't want to want to depress poll turnout by making people think.
And it was close to the election too, right?
Yeah. And they didn't want to depress the electorate by making them think that this wasn't going to be an honest.
And they also were met with a campaign on the Trump side that was throwing out that. I mean, they were every day. He was in a rally going, "We got to make sure it's not rigged."
That's right.
And he was doing everything he could to do exactly what the Obama administration. But it's a really fascinating read. The headline of the piece in Yahoo made it seem, it said how Obama blew it.
But when
you read it, actually, he didn't blow it. He actually did what you're supposed to do as president. A lot of the people around him, including the Senate president and the local board of elections, probably more on the hook than Obama. But a fascinating read if you look it up.
Yep.
It really does set the table. And also, you got to ask the question why we have not counterstruck to a country that tried to mess with our 2016 elections.
Although
there's a lot of questions of why that's not happening, and that's for a bigger
and that
on that note
on that note that's that. All right, there's a big one. What do you got for a story that's going to be remembered from this week? Ken Davis, why don't you start us off
from this week? I would go with the Tribune's story on the Foxconn deal to access water from Lake Michigan. It's not a great big deal right now. It's about a 7 million gallon a day suck out of the lake. But it's how it happened. And the governor of Wisconsin, who was able to kind of work between the lines and work with existing numbers that some other plants had closed down, and to ship this water halfway across the state, which is completely in violation of the accords, the Lake Michigan accords. And what worries me about it is that it just sets the precedent for the future.
And it also was part of the pitch. That's the other thing that kind of gets got them.
Oh, and while we're at it, we'll lower the air standards too.
Right. Yeah. Aaron, what do you got for the story that's going to be remembered? And
it turns out that there's a new report coming out from the urban ecologists showing that Chicago rats are very neighborhood centric, and the west side rats don't go to the north side, and the city rats never go to the south side. And this is a fundamental truth about the geography of our city. It's not just the suburbanites that don't go in, our rats don't either. And this will be the week where the truth comes out, and it'll shake the urban landscape.
Well, I'll go with I agree with that, and I will also say Justice Kennedy, rumors of his retirement, because that's just all
that's
sources
huge.
But
can I slide a quick one in?
Yeah.
100 years from now, activists will be arguing that we should abolish daylight savings time.
There it is. Aaron Freeman, Ken Davis, you guys, great segment tonight. Reloading this week's news. Appreciate
Thank you, brother.
Being here, guys.
Thank you.